Hello and welcome to the first episode of the View podcast series from Golden Leaves. My name is Malcolm Flanders, and over the months ahead, we're going to spotlight and expand on the potential challenges and future landscape for both the pre-need and at-need funeral sectors. These combined views will be covered in our featured podcast interviews with funeral industry icons and figureheads. So what better place to start than with Howard Hodgson, CEO of Memoria, who has a legendary history of association with the industry and an impressive story to tell. A fourth-generation funeral director himself, after taking over the family business in 1975, Howard went on to lead a journey of growth and expansion that culminated in the sale of his 546-branch group, after which he then launched a second career as CEO of Ronson PLC. Not satisfied with that, Howard then returned to the funeral industry as founder and CEO of Memoria and has developed it into the third largest and fastest growing crematoria company in the UK. In 2016, he founded Memoria Low Cost Funerals to compete in the direct cremation space and has also found time to write four books, including a detailed biography of His Majesty King Charles. So, Howard, good morning, and thank you very much for the opportunity to chat to you on our podcast series. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks.
Excellent. Now, look, first, it'd be quite nice to start because, I mean, that is some summary of achievement. So which part of that journey are you most proud of and why?
Well, I suppose the first section, I mean, there are two competing areas, really, for that. Section one was buying my father out, and because of demolition in the 60s and early 70s in Birmingham, the business, no houses, no people, no deaths, no funerals. And yeah, in fact, his numbers have been going down. He was actually a brilliant funeral director, and I had all of that given to me for nothing. Yeah. And it was a very big part of the success in years to come. So just making the business survive initially, I think at the age of 25, when the bank on the first day wanted to close me down, the manager said, "You, first of all, young man, you need two things in life. One is, in fact, you need to have security. We've got all your security. And two, you need an ability to repay, and you're making losses. So we're going to close you down." And I just said, well, you know, if you'd listen to what I was going to say, anyway, got out of bed on the right side, the toast had fallen on the floor on the right side, and had an argument with his wife, whatever. And the situation was that he gave me a £5,000 extension to keep going. Uh-huh. So, you know, the whole thing was very, very tough to start with. So that was good. And business was very much more difficult in those days because you didn't get to be a billionaire by sort of inventing some piece of software, yeah, or making something exciting on the social media or something, and then, yeah, really sitting back and becoming a billionaire overnight. You borrowed as much as you could when you could off a bank. They wanted your children. They wanted your wife. They wanted your house. They wanted your shirt. You had to put all these things up as security and make it work. And I think the reason we made it work was because, thanks to my father, we were very good funeral directors.
Yeah.
And we therefore had the right standards of service and facility to get the business up and running and going again. But of course, we didn't have enough people living near us, so we needed to start buying people.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what we did. But because of those standards of service and facility, we got organic growth. And because we also had a wide range of choice, it enabled those people to spend more if they wanted to, and people who didn't have to. But our average income per funeral was considerably higher as a result of offering people choice. And right, most directors in those days didn't. They just said, you know, this is what we offer you, one sort of coffin.
Yeah.
And then thirdly, by buying competitors and turning them into clusters round a hub, yeah, we were able to get much more use out of the capital equipment. So really, we were getting five funerals on a fleet a day,
right,
as opposed to five out of a week. So we were sweating the assets much, much harder. Mm. And as a result, success bred success. So we started making quite a lot of money very quickly, and therefore paid the banks back very quickly, therefore enabled us to go and buy more funeral directors very quickly. And we kept under everybody's radar. So when this dreadful man, Howard Hodgson, was suddenly arriving by the 80s, it was all too late. We'd done it. And it really took the Co-op and the Great Southern Group and other people by surprise. They were just astounded what had happened. And we'd gone from 400 funerals a year to at about by within a decade to about 5,000. So
Wow.
that was, but that was a good thing. And then, we floated the business. But without that initial start, the flotation, the Entrepreneur of the Year, and all of that would never have happened. So that was one good thing. The other thing is, Memoria is great because it was built completely differently. All of that growth was by acquisition.
Yeah.
Bit of organic growth, but mainly we didn't own greenfield sites. We just bought other funeral directors. But the second stage, the Memoria stage, was in fact growth, organic growth by getting planning consents and building crematoria, etc. And again, concentrating on the mission statement, concentrating on to doing unto others as you'd have done unto you,
Yeah.
to actually put people first and to give them exactly what they wanted. And not only to be kind and polite, but also efficient. Because however kind and polite you are, people never thank you for cocking up their mother's funeral. You've got to get it right.
Exactly. Yeah.
So those things were important, and we brought all of that sort of great tradition into Memoria. Memoria is much easier for two reasons. One is that actually, to be a crematorium company, once you've got the finance and you've built it, it's much easier to run a crematorium than it is a funeral business. And the funeral business, you've got to get the right body into the right coffin with the right sort of coffin, with the right sort of handles, with the right spelling of the Christian name, age, surname, date of death, if it's a Roman Catholic, RIP, on the plate, and a crucifix on the coffin lid. You've got to get it into the right hearse to go to the right address at the right time with the right number of cars, etc. And then you've got to turn up at the right crematorium at the right time. Whereas crematorium is really, they must have wonderful gardens, they must have wonderful facilities, they must be able to have a beautiful celebration of life, vintage screens, and all of these things. But actually, when it comes to most of that, they've just got to get the paperwork off the funeral director, to get the lights on and the doors open at the right time. It's a much easier job. But we could take all those big lessons of standards of service and facility that we'd learned at Hodgson, and as I said, in fairness, were given to me by my father free of charge. The fact is, we could take all that into Memoria and grow it organically by just employing people that had never been employed by municipal crematoria, that they only knew one way. It was our way. And it gave us huge Trustpilot results. And I've always thought that in both companies, and Memoria is a much better company because it was built by us organically with people that we took in and trained. Whereas, of course, when you get up to Hodgson Holdings and you buy out Kenyans, you've suddenly got 300 branches of people who don't like you, don't want to do it your way, and it becomes a much harder thing to manage.
Yes, got it. Okay, Howard, thank you. Wow. And my takeaway from that initially was the amount of tenacity on your part to make it all work in the first place. It sounds a lot of hard work. So thank you. Hey, look, so just going back to your starting point in 1975, then to the present day, what do you think are the most dramatic changes in the industry during that period?
In the 1970s, the British funeral industry was still largely, I mean, there weren't really very many big players. Kenyans were quite a big group. There was a little group owned by Fayed called Ingalls Industries, which owned quite a lot of funeral directors. And it originally came out of Ingalls, Parson and Clive. And there was the Great Southern Group would getting going, and there were one or two funeral directors like Lodge Brothers who were quite big, but really it was mainly other than the various co-ops. It wasn't just the CWS, of lots of local co-ops, even more local co-ops in those days. But the co-op was about 18% of the industry, and the big guys was probably at that time only about 2% of the industry. So 80% of the industry were small family funeral directors, and nothing had changed really for a decade. And so, on one way, while it was easier then or harder work to become successful. The competition just wasn't in the marketplace. I mean, and we managed to stay under people's radar for a long, long time while we were perfecting that acquisition program, which then was copied by Great Southern and Kenyans and other people that actually wanted to grow quickly. And it ended up with the three of those companies being floated on the stock market eventually. That was a big change. But then there were bigger changes to come afterwards, such as recently the CMA coming into the industry, the advent of direct cremation coming into the industry, and the FCA coming into pre-arranged funeral plans. And those things have had, different effects. I think the aspect of the FCA is very good, very necessary, essential, because you shouldn't have unregulated businesses carrying millions of pounds of other old
Indeed.
people's savings around without it being properly regulated. And
Sure.
I thought, I know obviously anything that is regulated becomes a bit more bureaucratic, etc. But in this case, it was essential. Whether the CMA made really very much difference, I don't think they made themselves any difference at all. But what they did do was introduce the fact that there was this huge mum and pup business that made other people want to get into it, but not by actually becoming funeral directors, but by getting in on the fact that there were lots of financial service products and other things for people to buy at that great juncture in their life when a family has a bereavement and everything has to be restructured again. And do I think direct cremation? I think direct cremation is all right insofar as that actually, if somebody wants a direct cremation, then the wider the range of choice, the better it is. That's a good thing. But I think that you've got to really talk as a family about what you want, because we see all the time that people, dad is a good man. He wants to actually, you can put me in a wheelie bin or in an orange box, I don't care. He wants to actually get everything done as cheap as possible, and he wants to give as much money as possible to his kids. But when in fact that plan, which he never talked to them about, comes to be redeemed, people go, what? There's no service, we can't go. How much will that cost, etc. So he's really had exactly the opposite effect that he wanted to have. So I think that isn't a very good thing. And I think it's direct cremation in its fullest sense isn't very good for the industry, because while it's given people more choice and that's reduced the price of funerals, so there's funeral deflation, and that's a good thing for the public because they've had more choice. But the point is this, is that actually, if funeral directors who have an 80% fixed overhead ratio, and if crematorium owners who put about the same amount of spend into their gardens, into their chapels, etc., that the actual cremation isn't an incinerator in a field. It is a very sophisticated establishment. And so 80% of those costs go towards that. So if in fact, and the average income in a funeral is, say, £4,000, of which, say, the cremation fee might be £1,000, the fact is that if those things start going so that the funeral director, instead of collecting £4,000, is collecting, in fact, less than £1,000, he suddenly got a big problem, because he's actually his income value has dropped considerably. And in the sort of boom years when inflation was forcing funeral prices up very little, but they were going up by 15% per annum, because in fact Dignity were driving up the price of funerals, the co-op were going, well, if they can do that, we can just match them and go up a bit behind them. And then the private firms are going, well, we can just go up too. And so in fact the situation is that the average inflation rate was about 3%, but over the first 15 years or so since the millennium, it went up by about 15% per annum in terms of funeral costs. And of course then got highlighted all the time by people like Sun Life going on the TV saying, oh, we all know what funerals cost, etc. And when that was happening, of course, that meant that sucked a lot of people into the market. Very often, with Dignity buying funerals, they were actually encouraging people, obviously, and then putting the price up to pay for it all. they were encouraging people to actually go into the funeral business again as competitors.
I
So
see.
the number of funeral directors since the millennium increased radically because when I was first a young funeral director in the late 60s, a big firm was, say, 1,000 a year. A
Yeah.
small firm was 250 a year. Today, in fact, a big firm is about 250 a year, and a small firm is about 35 a year. And that's because of the inflation in funeral prices. As that deflation happens, then in fact, the situation is that same numbers aren't sustainable. You will not be able to survive on 35 funerals a year. You will have to do a lot more than that. And direct cremation fuels that.
But I suppose the bereavement, the whole closure of grief
Exactly.
must be a challenge.
It is a challenge because I think, if the church was more important, and it's certainly a lot less important than it used to be in the funeral market. The fact is, if it was, it should be making a voice about the fact it's no good trying to pretend this thing hasn't happened. In other words, don't go to a service, don't bereave, have a drink down the pub with the family, or go to a restaurant and try and remember mum that way and save a lot of money. And it says quite a lot of bad things about what a material society we're becoming. So we'd rather actually save the money. Very middle class attitude that save the money. It's only going to be burnt, isn't it? And all of that, save the money because I've already got a second wife, second home, second mortgage I can't afford. And in fact, I'm going to save the money. That was very much a middle class attitude in the 70s compared to the working classes. We're going to show the straight arm mum was the best. And, hearse and floral hearse, six limousines, etc. So, those changes are maybe just material, but there is, I think, a bereavement problem with direct cremation that people don't get the chance to properly bereave. So I think on a one level, it's good to have it there as a reasonable choice. But if it was to be the very big upheaval and say became 40% of the market, that would be very serious because there's no way crematoria could be maintained. There's no way funeral directors could maintain their services on that sort of income. There's no way that actually a lot of people would be happy because, they're saying, "What's he done? I wanted to go to the service." And there's no way that they're only going to deal with bereavement. So I think that is storing up a problem for the future. I mean, it should be there because it's a right of choice. But I do think there are tremendous dangers with it becoming too big in the marketplace.
Okay, so if we set economics aside for a moment and that very good discussion around closure of grief, what impact do you also think technology's made? And I'm thinking more digital technology, just in the way you communicate and the way you run your business. Has that had an impact?
Yes, I mean, I think it makes, and for the main that that is a better impact. The fact of the matter is that we are, even in the funeral industry, starting to learn that we shouldn't be cutting down rainforests to have all the paperwork. The paperwork should be electronic, and that we should be communicating with our clients and with the funeral directors and everybody else electronically rather than by sending out brochures and all sorts of other things which are not good for the environment. So I think that's important. I think the advent of mercury abatement was very good for the, in a technical term, for the environment. I think the situation of gas cremators have become a lot more efficient, but there's still nothing like as efficient as electric cremators when it comes to carbon footprint. Having said that, we've got to be very wary of greenwashing. That there has been a thing around for about 30 years called resumation, but actually that is, and people are trying, never wanting to actually get it across, it never took off. But it's now sort of people are trying to reinvent it as a being a sort of a green thing. It's actually about the same as gas cremation and a lot less efficient carbon footprint wise than electric cremation. So, but so they're sort of trying to sell the public on it's not a bad idea to have your mother flush down the sewer. Because it's a good carbon footprint is actually telling a fib. It is not a good carbon footprint. I mean, it's a personal choice whether you want to have your dad flushed away. But on the fact is, and that's up to you. But it's not good for people to be telling everybody that actually this is a green thing because it isn't a green thing at all.
Thank you. Okay. Look, can we just turn specifically to funeral plans for a moment? Notwithstanding FCA regulation, why do you think they're an important part of what a funeral director business should be offering as part of the proposition?
Well, I think it's everybody's, it's a very good idea. And for a long time, right the way back, way before funeral plans became important as part of people's desire to actually make provision for their funeral so that their children or their spouse or didn't have to pay for it.
Yeah.
The fact was that, and that they were going to get a funeral that they wanted. That's a point, isn't it? It actually, you're not going to be there. Yes, it is right that you have something that you want, but also you should take your family into consideration.
Yeah.
But so those things are all good. But, you know, 40, 50 years ago, people would come in and, with a wad of cash and say, can I leave this with you? And this is, let's sit down and I'll write out what I want. And, you know, and people used to come in and do all that. And it was so prevalent in the late 70s and 80s that we used to open a separate bank account and put all the money in there so it couldn't wash around in our own funds, etc. So people always did do that. And I think it's something that they will always want to do because as people get older, they do really fret about A, the cost or having the sort of funeral they want to have, or say making the savings that they want to make, or preventing anybody in their family having to make these decisions and pay for them. Yeah. So that and to have that regulated is a very good thing. And I think it is a central part of the armor. I also think funeral directors are very good people to sell it because actually people walk into their branch office or their funeral home and ask for it.
Yeah.
And therefore, as long as they are an appointed rep of somebody like Golden Leaves or Pure Cremation or whoever they're in a situation of following, as long as they obey those rules as set out by the FCA, it is a very good thing because they're not doing a safe hands, are they? They're not going to be getting onto the phone to people, chase people, try and actually sell the thing. It's a very passive sell when it goes through a funeral director because people have just walked into the office and asked for it. And I think as a result, the quality of business would be very good as well because you won't get lapses or NTUs or anything like that because, in fact, it's been a mental decision by the person to walk into the funeral director's premises in the first place.
Now, I just want to come back to direct cremation again, given your comments earlier. Do you think the attraction of direct cremation has peaked amongst the populace now, or do you think it will carry on increasing?
I think there is probably a likelihood that it's still got a bit of way to go. I couldn't, honestly, I'd be pulling you with absolute rubbish if I actually told you I had any idea where it was going to go. I don't. But I suspect, and the reason that I suspect that it is going to go on is that if you turn on ITV3 or ITV4 in the afternoon, that is when people are over 65 are watching all the programs that they liked in the 70s and 80s, like the Sweeney, Minder, Poirot, etc. And they're watching those programs. And every advert break has got a Pure Cremation advert on. And the next one has a Distinct advert on. And the situation is that Pure Cremation and Distinct would not be delivering those messages at great expense all the time if they weren't selling quite a lot of product. Mm-hmm. So the situation is, because there is millions being spent every month by those companies. And as a result, they couldn't be sustaining that if they weren't actually making gains. So the fact is you haven't seen it. And that's what funeral directors should really wake up to, is they haven't seen that yet because those people haven't died yet.
Yes.
When they do die in the next 7 or 8 years' time, then it will be like a big fall in the death rate to a lot of funeral directors.
Yes.
So, you know, therefore, funeral directors who should either have a direct cremation strategy, and they should make it part of their business plan, and they also should give people, I think high street funeral directors will, by and large, be safe. on one thing, and that is that it's only really, I think, we'll come down to it in the end. It is people who really are absolutely determined. It's quite a small percentage who are absolutely determined not to have a funeral service. I think the majority of people who have direct cremation are in a situation of actually doing it because of price and because of the need. But the trouble is, if you actually watch those adverts every afternoon, you will see that they're trying to change the fashion. They're trying to say to you, you don't really need a service. It isn't really a good idea to have a service. Nobody want, I think the pure cremation advert says, nobody wants to go to a service, do they? So that is something you've got to fight back against. Hodgson Holdings only happened because it slipped under the radar, and by the time people woke up to what we were doing, it was all too late. We'd done it.
Indeed. Yeah.
And that's what I suspect is happening here. And I think that, you know, as a result, you people are unfortunately like lemmings. Fashions are created. I mean, you know, is there any sense to fashion industry? I mean, you know, 30 years ago, I think Paul McCartney wrote a song, "Look out what's on the rack because it's coming back." Oh, it's absolutely true. I mean, the fact is, you know, I see my kids go from tight jeans to baggy jeans to bell
Yeah.
bottom. And they all come round again in a circle. And so the public just listen to what they're told. And if you get that sort of advertising campaign that's going on now every day, there's no reason to suspect that it will not have some generation. And if it becomes a fashion thing that actually you don't go to the service, then I think that is very serious. And I think funeral directors have got to try and actually concentrate. They mustn't make the mistake of thinking that actually people don't want a funeral service. What they've got to probably say is that, look, people don't necessarily want to have a Victorian funeral service.
Sure.
That means that they don't necessarily want to have a floral hearse, four limousines, and all the expense that they have to go to for that. Because when the church ran everything, you've got a 10-minute time, you've got a rota minister, you weren't allowed to have a eulogy or say anything. There was no personal music. There was no Let It Be by the Beatles or whatever. There was just maybe a psalm and maybe a hymn if you were lucky. And the situation is there was no way to express yourself. So the only way you could express yourself is by the sort of coffin you chose, or the number of limousines you had, or the number of flowers that were adorned on the garden of rest afterwards. Those are the only expressions that you could show that what you wanted. Whereas, of course, today you can go into a crematorium chapel and have a big celebration of that person's life. And that is a way which I think funeral directors have got to go, because they don't have to have so much to worry about with the church. I think it is, if somebody had said to me in 1999, that by 2025, about 80% of all funerals would be conducted by celebrants and not ministers of the church, I would say, no, absolute nonsense, that will never happen. But it has. And that just shows you that and how the industry has changed over the periods we've been talking about, just shows that this might happen too. So you've got to really try and sell the alternatives.
And the key message I got there is just being very vigilant what's happening in terms of advertising around your area as funeral directors, and do what you can to raise awareness of the fact you could offer direct cremation as well.
I think, yes, you know, the funeral director should be saying to people, and we do offer partnerships with people, either white label or brand partnerships, where in fact we encourage them to be able to offer direct cremation as part of their armory. We're on funeral directing's sides. We want everybody to be able to have the sort of service they want. So if they want a floral hearse, a hearse and six limousines, they should be able to have it. If they want to have a celebration of life service, they should be able to have it. They want a direct cremation, they should be able to have it. But we need to protect the industry a bit from just all going towards direct cremation because of somebody's desire to change the fashion in the market.
Got that loud and clear, Howard. Thank you. All right, now look, final question. What advice would you share with your fellow funeral directors across the UK? What would that advice look like?
Well, I'm not sure that I'm really privileged enough or entitled enough to tell those guys what to do. I mean, the vast majority of funeral directors and the vast majority of family funeral businesses, which might be second, third, fourth, or fifth, or even sixth generation businesses, know what they're doing. What I would say, though, is, and I have seen quite a lot of this change over a period of time, that they're not quite as, dyed in their ways as they were, and that are starting to move with the time. And the younger generation of funeral directors are becoming electronically aware and modern technology aware, and actually more attuned to what the public might want. My advice would be to actually think all the time about how to give the highest possible standards of service and facility with as much choice as possible. I think the vast majority of them do that. I think it's very important to offer pre-arranged funeral plans because they have their names on them. And the situation is, if you don't sell those, but I mean, for example, I always say at memorial, if people aren't buying a memorial pre-arranged funeral plan, the fact is that down the road, that we won't be doing the funerals. We won't be doing the cremations because they'll be going to a Westerly crematorium, or they'll be going to somebody else's crematorium. They won't be coming to ours. So it is very important to actually just not put your fingers in your ear and go, la, 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 I don't want to hear all this. And I think that was the big mistake of funeral directors 50 years ago. It was a very cozy little club and they didn't really want it to change. And so they did stick their fingers in their ears and go, no, 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 it's not going to happen. Well, of course, it did happen. And they really, my advice would be, let's all work together to get the right quality for the client and the choice for the client. And then direct cremation will just, it'll just take its natural place.
Fantastic. Howard, brilliant. Thank you ever so much. Appreciate your time. And really, a big thank you from Golden Leaves and also from Barry Floyd, who sends his personal thanks. We really do appreciate you talking to us today and for sharing with us your insights and view. Well, that concludes our first in the series from Golden Leaves, but do look out for future episodes in the months ahead. We'll also be featuring conversations with funeral directors who hail from multi-generational firms to hear how the family business model has moved with the times over the last 150 years or so. If you would like to appear on the podcast with me or wish to share any insight about the market, please do contact me at malcolm.flanders@goldenleaves.com or ring me on 07702 259 582. I would be delighted to hear from you. In the meantime, thank you for listening and do look out for me the next time on The View podcast.